My mother often asks me, you know, why did I give up full-time medical practice to go into politics? And I always reply that the reason for being a doctor is, as far as I'm concerned, the same as the reason to be a politician is that you want to serve and you want to do the best by the people you represent.
You're listening to Humans of Politics, a podcast about how it feels to be a politician. My name is A.B. Philpin-Bowman, and my guest today is the British Liberal Democrat MP and former Conservative, Dr. Philip Lee.
And actually, the longer I spent in medicine, the more political I became, because most of my patients, it's often the context in which they're living which shapes their presentation to me as a doctor. So I would look at things and go, why are people living like this? Why is this person presenting like this? And then you'd go back and it turns out to be nature of their employment, nature of their home life, housing, relationship breakdowns, addiction, blah, 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 blah. You can get a long, 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 long list. And so even though I was sort of a bit of a political animal at school, and probably most of my contemporaries at school are probably not surprised that I've done what I've done, I think the more I practiced medicine, the more it became evident that I had to try. And you're now interviewing me as a Member of Parliament.
And in terms of medicine and politics, just on a daily basis, which is more stressful, which is more fun?
I think being a full-time GP is more demanding than being a full-time politician. I think it's different in that just the intensity of the decision-making process in medicine is much greater than it is in politics. And this was quite it became quite clear to me when I was a minister that I was used to making more decisions as a GP than I was as a minister. And my officials used to sort of comment upon the speed at which I made decisions. And I said, well, because I'm used to having to do that, because I see 40 patients in a day and they each come in with 2 to 3 problems, it's over 100 decisions a day, or perhaps even more. And so I think being a full-time GP is more demanding in that regard. What's uniquely worrying about politics, and I think this is more the case, and we're now doing a podcast and social media and everything else, I think what's uniquely worrying about politics is this sense that you're being constantly assessed and observed. And it's uniquely wearing. And with Brexit, it's been so... The whole issue of Brexit, whichever side you sit on that issue, it has toxified public discourse in Britain like nothing else I can think of. And so there is that constant abuse, which is unfortunate, shouldn't be happening, but it's just a reality for all politicians. So it's stressful being in politics, but not because it's hard work in a traditional processing information, making decisions type way, because general practice is on a different level to this.
Talk to me a bit about the values, the reasons why you chose to join the Conservative Party, and the values, that similar values, I suspect, that are the reason that you left it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I left the Conservative Party. I feel like it left me. The Conservative Party, the answer's in the name. It's about conservation. It's about stewardship. It's about passing on a better legacy to future generations. It's about being responsible. It's about being pragmatic. It should be about evidence. And increasingly, and it's not just over Brexit, but increasingly, I just felt like the party I joined in 1992 under John Major was not the party that I was then a member of. Of course, Brexit's the issue that sort of pushed me over the edge. Realistically, whatever happens, the Brexit that emanates from this process is not in the best long-term interests of this country, as far as I'm concerned. There isn't a Brexit that is, really. And so consequently, as somebody who believes in conserving and passing on a better legacy to his children, how could I stay in a party that was hell-bent on delivering something which, in my judgment, is deleterious to my children and grandchildren's future?
What was the hardest thing about leaving the Conservative Party for you?
Well, I mean, after 27 years of membership, active membership, you know, I've campaigned all over the country, I've done by-elections, year-elections, local elections, general elections since 92, and including 1992, I've formed lots of relationships, and some of them have, you know, are going to struggle as a consequence of this decision to be maintained. So on a personal level, it wasn't easy. But actually, when you just looked at the reality of where we were, the nature of the current administration in Number 10, I didn't find that, making a decision on the basis of that, difficult. But I think on a human level, I found it hard, and that's why I took some time over before arriving at making the decision. I've been thinking about it for a few months.
And what was the biggest relief?
That I'd actually made a decision, because it'd been, you know, I'd been carrying it around in my mind for a number of months, and I was increasingly just not optimistic about the future of the Conservative Party from, well, it's 2 years now. And I tried my best. I threw the kitchen sink at it, really, trying to persuade enough colleagues to back a final say referendum and try to get the Conservative Party back, but I failed. And what you're seeing now is rather belatedly a number of Conservatives who've lost the whip have realised that their party has been lost. And it's just like, you know, it's a bit frustrating for me because I was telling all of these people over a year ago that this is what was going to happen, and they've waited perhaps too long, sadly. And, you know, I can now look on from afar, separate from the party, and I don't take pleasure in this at all. I just wish things would have turned out differently. But unfortunately, this Brexit issue is like the Corn Laws.
You had a pretty dramatic exit from the Conservative Party. Boris Johnson, who'd only been in power for 5 weeks, he had a majority of one. He was addressing the House of Commons. And midway through his speech, you stood up and crossed the floor to join the Liberal Democrats. So power literally ebbed away from him as he was speaking. Talk to me about how you planned that and what it felt like.
Well, look, I mean, it was a bit of theatre in that it was visual, I suppose. I can't deny that. But I was physically crossing the floor. That's what I was doing. So why not do it then? So I waited. The timing of it, I did take a lot of planning. The timing of it was there was a new Liberal Democrat Member of Parliament for Brecon and Radnorshire being introduced to the House and to the Speaker. And I didn't want to upstage that, so Jane Dodds went through and did her thing, so to speak. And then I just joined the Liberal Democrats on their side of the House because I was no longer going to be a Conservative, and I thought that was the right time to do it. And, yeah, I mean, of course it made for camera shots and everything else, but realistically, what was I supposed to do? Just sort of issue a statement? Was I?
Am I right that you checked your heart rate, or your heart rate checked you out?
Yeah, no. I've got one of these iWatch things, which I don't really know how it works. It certainly hadn't done this before. I sort of sat down next to Joe Swinson, and it started to vibrate and flash red, sort of flash at me. And I was thinking, why is that doing that? And it was because my pulse rate was running above 120 and had been for about 4 or 5 minutes without me moving. And I think that can herald a cardiac event. And so the watch was telling me that I needed to, you know, essentially what it was that just the pressure of the moment. It's like stage nerves, isn't it, really? I mean, anybody who's ever done a bit of amateur dramatics knows that you feel a bit, oh, my God, I'm about to walk on stage. And it felt a bit like that, really, and then it just settled, went away.
As a GP, of course, you know all about stress and good stress and bad stress. What's the rough ratio that an MP has in their day?
Oh, it's too much bad stress, and it's predominantly because of 24-hour news media and social media and all the other things, I think. I don't think the job itself should be stressful. I don't think that we have many decisions to make in a typical working day, and it should be all within our capacity to do that. I think what makes it difficult is the constant analysis, the constant abuse. And yes, there are security threats and things like that that come in intermittently. That makes it harder. Actually, there are people working in very difficult circumstances up and down the country as we speak, making more difficult decisions in difficult environments. And so I don't want to overplay it, but I just think it is uniquely wearing being a Member of Parliament at the moment. And I can see my colleagues around me ageing. I've taken up the piano this week because I know that I've got to do something else to feed my soul.
There was a challenging moment shortly after you joined the Liberal Democrats where a number of party members resigned in protest. They claimed that you were a homophobe and they cited your voting record as evidence, and that's kind of how the story was fairly widely reported in the papers. Now, it then transpired that they had completely misunderstood your voting record. I think the key vote was around whether or not migrants should get HIV testing, and their view was, well, that stigmatises migrants, whereas you were looking at it as a doctor who has treated migrants, and your view is, as I understand it,
basically, if anyone in society has HIV, as a doctor, I want to know that as soon as possible so that I can get them the treatment they need, and also so we can take steps to prevent this virus from accidentally spreading any further than it needs to. But parking all the sort of public health arguments for a moment, I just want to know at a human level, how did it feel to have your views so publicly misrepresented?
This is the problem that I think all politicians have when they try to make arguments that sometimes are quite difficult, perhaps nuanced, and social media doesn't do nuance. And you drop one word out of a sentence, or there's a word in a probing amendment that is perhaps could have been better or whatever. You know, there's all of those sorts of potential little errors which are not made with any malicious intent, but you get used to in politics of being guilty till proven innocent. And I don't think this is actually helpful. I think it doesn't aid proper discourse, and it certainly doesn't aid the proper consideration of informed argument. And in the case of the stuff that you refer to, it wasn't even an equality issue. It was a public health issue. And actually, when people got to understand that it was about public health, they all got a bit sheepish because they'd all jumped to the conclusion, maybe because I was once a Tory, oh, he must be a homophobe then. When quite clearly I am not and have never been. But you sort of, you get to a certain extent, you get jaded and a bit tired of the laziness of people's judgments without actually going to source and asking first before pressing tweet and holding forth in the public arena. And yeah, I mean, I was defamed and libelled and everything else, left, right and centre. What do you do about that in my circumstance? It's not something you can in any way enjoy. You just have to hope that enough sensible, reasonable people realise that motivations are honourable and based upon evidence. And I think when people actually got to that and realised what it was all about, it all started to go away. There's a broader problem with the interpretation of voting records, full stop, in that if you've been taken a party whip, or if you've been, particularly if you've been a minister, and your collective responsibility and everything else, you end up voting for things at times you think, I'm not really sure about this, but it's all part of the, that's what it is to be in government and to be a member of a party. And so the idea that your voting record reflects what you individually think on all issues is clearly bollocks, you know, it's just not true.
Finally then, is there a politician who you completely disagree with on Brexit, but who you like or respect at a personal level?
Steve Barclay. We were friends before we came here. We agreed on virtually everything except our relationship with Europe. The interesting thing for me, and I'm sure Steve would tell you this, is that I was never some sort of passionate Europhile, some federalist. I mean, the people in the Tory party who are passionate Europhiles and federalists are all in government. Some of them are in cabinet. And you should go and interview them and ask them, where's all their passion dissipated to? Because you're actually talking to somebody who was quite a Euro-realist in many ways. It's easy to criticise the European Union. It's a flawed organisation like any other human endeavour. And so I think Steve would say, you know, Philip was never some passionate EU member. In fact, I was never a member of the Conservative Group for Europe until I resigned from government. And yet there were members of the Conservative Group for Europe who were in favour of Brexit. I think Steve and I, it's like we are mates. So he's like the Brexit secretary, and he's over, I don't think he's been in front of a committee this morning. But on a personal level, we're mates, and I hope long may that be the case. But he has always been consistent himself about wanting to leave the European Union, ever since I've known him. And so I've always been very sort of like, it's not something I really want to talk about. I mean, this is the irony, really, for me, is I didn't think our membership or not of a supranational organisation was a pressing political issue. I was quite agnostic about it, really, in an odd sort of way. And here I am now cast as some sort of, you know, rabid Remainer. I mean, it's beyond parody, really.
Thanks for listening to Humans of Politics Season 2. There'll be more from Westminster next week. If anything got you angry or got you thinking, all feedback is welcome. I am on Twitter as AB Philbin Bowman, at ABIEPB. If you live in or near Dublin, our first ever live event takes place on November the 21st as part of the Dublin Festival of Politics. The lineup that evening includes a world-class musician, a former Taoiseach and Minister for Health, a TV presenter turned party leader, and a man who helped to transform Ireland from a country where it was illegal to be gay to one which voted by over 60% for marriage equality. Full details and tickets at festivalofpolitics.ie. Finally, You've probably noticed that we are living through a time when democracy itself is under attack and where political debate has become angry, distrustful, and hyper-partisan. And I'm not suggesting that we can single-handedly reverse that with podcasts, but if you think that conversations like this are a step in the right direction and you'd like more people to discover it, the easiest and cheapest thing you could do would be to leave us a nice review wherever you listen. Thanks again.